Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, good evening. This is the 14th day of October, the second show of An Emerging Forest of October in 2018. And, of course, it's a little after 9 p.m. on Sunday evening. And we're going to talk about a subject that's been in the news very prevalently or very much recently with the Supreme Court nomination, with Bill Cosby and his trial concluding, well, his trial concluding a while ago, his sentencing a few weeks ago. And here to introduce our topic in a little bit more depth is Dave Miller. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thank you, Alan.
And I'd just like to bring our first caller on the air.
Oh, please.
So that whoever it is included.
Beautiful.
So who's on the line?
Marcy.
Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Marcy. So I'm glad Marcy's on, and we hope to have a few others as well. And I think one thing you brought up, Alan, is that Me Too has been on the lips of many folks for, tomorrow will be 1 year ago, that it was sent out as a hashtag. And that's when it reached something like 200,000 retweets, et cetera, in one day. However, the Me Too was actually coined in 2006. So a woman named Tarana Burke wanted to help the survivors of sexual violence. And she, at the time, was thinking along the African-American community, the young women, and she was looking for empowerment through empathy. And she was trying to help a 13-year-old girl who had confided in her. And then in 2017, October 15th, so again, it's 1 year ago, Alicia Milano encouraged the spreading using the current hashtag, MeToo. And it was to draw attention to sexual assault and harassment, so it included things more than just direct penetration and fondling, et cetera, but coercion of any kind in the workplace. And it has now grown to include males, myself included, who have had problems. You know, when I was a teen, I was fondled inappropriately. And Well, one of the things I want to talk about today, for anybody who calls in, you're welcome to tell your personal stories and any thoughts, but also I want to see what people's ideas are on how we can set up the protocol for today so that we can eliminate or at least minimize the issues that have gone on. And that could be as simple as the hugging, you know, what is appropriate in modern times. So that's where I'm setting this, the tone for today, but it will go wherever it goes. So hi, Marcy, how are you?
Okay.
Do you have anything in particular on this topic that you would like to share?
What I think is most important is that we make it not about gender.
Okay.
So I'm glad because there's just as many little boys as little girls being abused, practically.
Okay.
And it's not a new thing. And I also want to, which is important to me, is to understand that we need to empower people to to be responsible for themselves and teach them how to defend themselves when they don't feel comfortable.
Okay.
A lot of times it's just because we don't speak up because we think we have trust issues. It's not we have trust issues, is that we don't trust our own knowledge of what is right or wrong anymore because somebody blurred those lines for us.
Excellent.
So we're taught not to trust who we are or how we feel about things. And what I want to see is that we stop it by teaching children how to trust themselves and to know that what they feel is important and they need to be able to say, to defend themselves in whatever way they can.
Part of what you relate, or what I relate to what you're saying is, not just the sexual component, but bullying in school. Kids are put into positions where they are not able to defend themselves or they're not confident to speak out. So my question to you, Marcy, is does it belong to the parents who barely teach their kids about sex, or is it about the schools who should implement programs? What are your thoughts?
It has to be a community thing because we can't put a burden. So we put a lot of burden on the school system, and we ask a lot of these people, and then we don't stand up for them as teachers. What is it we want teachers to teach? That's a good question. You know, how much can they take over for the parents because the parents are busy working? So there's got to be more. It's got to be community outreach programs. It's got to be...
Would that include things like billboards or radio announcements, you know, public service announcements that say, you know, you're a good person, don't let it happen to you, speak out about it?
That's always a good thing. So it's multiple things, I think. And
what about
and,
a school
we
counselor?
Have a we have a tendency as people, we see things happen and we don't say anything.
There's a psychological phenomena for that. If somebody else will take care of it.
Somebody else will take care of it, or it's not my business, or, you know, I may get sued, or, you know, but, and maybe we need to teach people how to do it so it's not like a confrontation. That what we don't want people, you know, physically hurting other people, even in defense, even though it seems like the right thing to do, we can do this in a peaceable way. That, you know, say, hey, what's going on here? Because you might not understand what's going on there, but you know that's the problem. We don't want to be responsible for actions, and so it's how you approach. Because you may not understand the situation, and what you see may not be what's really happening. But not to interfere. So it's teaching people how to interact without being confrontational.
So in some cultures, amongst the Native American and African cultures, they have a tribal system of elders where if somebody has done something wrong in society, they are brought in front of the elders to discuss it. And, you know, if a punishment is meted, that will happen. But usually they will be outcast, you know, verbally or emotionally, and shamed for their action. And that tends to work, but we don't have a tribal council in the United States. That we don't have.
Well, wait a minute. I want to say something about that. There's also in Africa, where what happens when somebody does something wrong, the community comes together to say that, you know, to point out how good they are. And maybe you made a mistake. Under, you know, you're still worthwhile. I don't know that it's a good thing to outcast anybody. I don't want to exclude people because what you're saying, because any one of us at any point in time can appear to be doing something that may not be right, but is perfectly agreeable to the people involved. Because there's reasons that it is that you, as an observer, you don't know the whole story.
Would that be considered something, an act consensual, as opposed to society not approving of it?
I think it's just not seeing the whole picture.
Okay.
Because a lot of things can happen in which you don't know how it got to that point. You just walk in on the point. I put it on like, I watched some interactions between a couple of people, and I jumped to conclusions because I didn't know the situation. I didn't know what they meant to each other. But these are consensual people. Children are different in that children can't necessarily consent.
Right. Well, you bring up a good point. And, you know, when I was prepubescent, I'm trying to figure out if I was 10, 11, or 12. But, you know, my mom worked craft shows, and there was a gentleman there who was a vendor, and we got to talking, and I was into HO trains and all, and he said, "Oh, I have a nice HO train set at my house. You should come, and you know, you can enjoy it and play and blah blah blah." And my mom, being a very trusting person, said okay, and so she drove me to Princeton and dropped me off at this gentleman's house. Now, he brought me into the bedroom, and we sat down and talked, and there were no HO trains. He pulled out some swinger magazines and whatever was current in the 70s and proceeded to put his hand down my pants and try to fondle me, and at which point I knew whatever it was wasn't right, consent or otherwise. And his wife was in the kitchen cooking. And I stood up and said, "I think we're supposed to eat dinner." And you know, I was able to stop it before it got any further. But that was only part of it. I had to sit there through the dinner uncomfortably. I had to have him drive me home. I would not let him know where I lived, so I had him drop me off on the corner. But that was only the first part of it, because when I went inside, immediately reported to my mom what had happened. My mom, being a pretty understanding liberal lady, chose to say, "I'm sorry to hear that happened," and that was the end of it. And it wasn't until this Me Too movement that I realized she never reported it, which means that gentleman, in all likelihood, went on for who knows how many years and continued to do it. And who knows how many other young boys were put through that imposition. And live with a scar as a result. Now, I've talked about it in counseling many years back, but it was only until this Me Too movement that I realized we aren't teaching our kids, or our parents aren't even supporting it. And the question is, are our parents not supporting it because they themselves were abused? Is it a cycle that's just repeating? You know, education in school barely talks about your body and sex education. It's gotten better in the last 30 years or 40 years, but are we teaching our kids what's appropriate, not appropriate for touch, and how to report it? And are the kids being believed?
I can't speak to what we're doing nowadays. But I can speak to the fact that I was my dad's caregiver, and we would watch Oprah Winfrey at 4 o'clock. And one day she had the men, all the men that were abused, and that's all that was in the audience as little boys. And the reaction for my dad was like he knew about this kind of stuff when he was growing up, because he was also he was, you know, the prime suspect for pedophiles children of single parents, because you have lost somebody, you've been abandoned pretty much by one of your parents. He talked about, so we're talking about, this is in the 30s, and he said that there was a guy on the block that would have the kids over, and they would drink and they would play cards. But his reaction was like all denial, that he never went. But I know for a fact the people in his group, his friends, most of them became alcoholics. Some of them were abusive of their families, their wives, their daughters. And all that comes from having been abused. So in those days, there wasn't any, those things weren't talked about. You know, your feelings for that your father dying wasn't discussed. You weren't even really allowed to be a part of the mourning process. And
guys can't cry kind of thing, sure.
And, well, you know, children just, you know, weren't available. And these things are not new. These things are not unknown, but they weren't spoken about. And there was no, when I was growing up, there was no Dyfus. There was no 180. There was no safe place for people to leave. You were stuck. If your family had one car, you were blessed. There was nowhere you could go. Women didn't really work in the workforce. They had just the women's job, things like a hairdresser and whatever. Secretarial and things like that. And you were stuck with abuse. You were stuck
communication wasn't able to happen because we didn't have social media. You were lucky if you had a telephone, and there was one telephone on the wall.
And sometimes you even had a party line, and people don't know, people don't understand where we've come in a very short period of time. There was no cell phone, and you watched TV with your family maybe for an hour at night or 2 hours, and it was black and white, and feel like I was in the Stone Age, but it wasn't that long ago.
Very true.
Most people didn't have color TV until, getting into the 70s, late 70s and early 80s. That was a luxury. And,
well, with TV, we didn't even have... Sex was not seen on TV, and then, flash forward, Jerry Springer broke strides by having whatever is possible, discussed about. And then you had Ruth speak about sex and Oprah bring people on and gay talk show hosts and all. We are at a point where communication is opening up, but it is taking a long time. And I don't know today where kids would turn to if they have two parents that are working. When do they have time to be intimate enough to talk to their mom or dad and say, I'm not comfortable with something that happened today at school. And I don't know where we're at about males being able to talk to their dad. My dad was old school. He was very uncomfortable talking about feelings, let alone anything else. So, everything I learned or associated was through my mom. And I don't know. I mean, we've got the feminine rising. We've got more males comfortable with themselves just being able to talk about things, but we're adults doing that. And I don't know what's happening with the kids today. I would love somebody to call in that is a current teacher, that would be great. And share with us what's going on in the schools, because I don't know what opportunities exist.
This is a live program, and to call in and possibly address Dave's question, the number is 646-564-9714. Go ahead, Dave.
Thank you, Alan. On terms of things like harassment, have we changed what's considered harassment? I mean, we now have the term date rape. Sexual harassment obviously has been showing up in the news even more and more, with celebrities and politicians being accused. One question I have, is there a timeline? That was brought up in the news. Is there a timeline where it no longer is considered significant to report? That was brought up for our Judge Kavanaugh. I mean, somebody said, well, oh, that's too far past. It's not important. But it doesn't stop the person's memories or the PTSD, and the allegation is true or not. It's still vivid.
I do believe there's, you know, I think the only crime that doesn't have a termination is murder. You can be, you know, if they can find you and figure out that you murdered somebody, there's no time limit. But
okay.
I think it depends on how that crime is rated.
So we consider murder obviously never ending, because you know you'll track down the person at some point. But sexual harassment is considered lesser and okay to sweep it under the rug at some point.
Well, I guess it depends on the state, because I think that's the states regulate if it's a misdemeanor, the length of time you serve, depending on what it is.
So I'm skipping over to a website that talks about the statute of limitations on rape, and from state law, you can just page through Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, no statute of limitation. Arkansas, 6 years for first degree offenses, 3 years for second, third, and fourth. California, 10 years. Colorado, 10 years. Connecticut, 5 years, and on like that. So Delaware, no statute of limitations. Florida, no statute of limitations for sexual battery with physical force or deadly weapon. 4 years for first-degree offenses. So it varies widely, but a lot of states is no statute of limitation.
Okay, so that's good.
So
well, there is no statute
point,
of limitation.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to break for our break. Very interesting discussion, first program on this subject. And I'd like to play Dave the Bard, How and Toe. I'll be back in a couple minutes, everyone. Hang on there.
Take no scorn to wear the horn. Was the crest when you were born? Your father's father wore it, and your father wore it too. Winter's gone away.
for summer is a coming in and winter's gone away.
Tune in to International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to An Emerging Forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back, everyone. And let me get my guest back on. Hi, Dave. Hi, Marcy.
Hello, Alan.
So, as we went to break, we were talking about statute of limitations. And during the break, I reviewed a bunch more, and it's a mixed bag. I would say roughly half of the states, and I don't have an exact count, roughly half the states is no statute of limitations. But here we are, or here I am in New Jersey, just literally across the river, across a bridge from Pennsylvania. And the statute of limitations in New Jersey is no limitation. So if it was 40 or 50 years old and your attacker is still alive, you can prosecute and go across the river, and it's only 12. Some states, it's only 6. So it's a very mixed bag. It's very interesting why it would be such a mixed bag, but states are states. So,
I'm wondering how we're making this process work in today's standards. We have the ability to report. We have the social media, which will certainly spread the word. And we have news organizations that are supportive overall, I hope. Right before our national election, we had a film revealed of our president. And it clearly showed that he would take advantage of a woman given his status. And that scares me, because we turned around and elected him anyway. We poo-pooed it. We also, of course, had a president in the White House who allowed himself to have sexual favors performed. And he was, no charges were brought up on him for that. So the question becomes, where are we today, where we can report something a later date, which could hurt somebody in their future career? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because personally, I think we need to report it. I don't see a statute of limitations, although it's kind of hard. I mean, are you talking about between two young kids fooling around? Are you talking about two adults that one gets angry? Are you talking about an adult and a kid, which clearly is a violation of the law? Bill Cosby is an example. I mean, he was a father figure to all of us, Mr. Jell-O, and all the TV shows he had. And we've now seen someone who has been convicted and will serve jail time. And it's sad, but it's a good thing that it's been taken care of, because he clearly crossed boundaries way many times. And recently I put together a festival where I was told at the end of the festival that I hugged too much. And I thought about that. What did that mean? I hugged too much. Hugging's a good thing. Is society against hugging? Am I hugging somebody who has PTSD and it triggers something? Because that was something I had never thought about, even after the Me Too movement surfaced strongly a year ago. And a friend of mine said, well, if you're meeting somebody for the first time, you can't assume anything. So you can ask appropriately, are you a hugger? Are you a handshaker? You know, you want to elbow to elbow, you know. And that woke me up, because I don't want somebody to feel that my genuine hug was not received appropriately because it triggered something in their past. So that's something that I can address Marcy. I guess we don't have other callers at this moment, but it's what are the current standards? I mean, we're old school. You and I are about each other's age, and I don't know what's appropriate these days anymore.
I tried to say this today when he asked me this question before. Sometimes I don't think you can just ask all these questions of people. You can just say, do you mind if I hug you, and leave it at that. If they say, yes, I mind, then you honor it. I think that you can kind of tell when somebody doesn't want you to hug them, usually, sometimes. You know, you see them stiffen. You say, oh, okay, well, I probably shouldn't hug that person, and I won't. I'll just say, hi, how are you doing? Like, we have a mutual friend that I know doesn't like to be touched, and he makes it known. It's, you know, it's obvious. You know, I think it's got to be, it's not just one person's responsibility. And that's what I'm trying to get, is that it's each person's responsibility to tell people how you feel. You know, if somebody's coming at you and they're going to hug you, you can say, oh, wait a minute, I don't know you that well. You can put your hand out and say, wait a minute, I don't know you that well. Don't do that. You know, you're crossing the line let's get to know each other before I'm going to let you hug me. You know, and you can say it in a nice way. You don't have to yell at that. You're trying to do whatever to me. No, you just say, hold on. I see you. You want to hug me, but I'm not comfortable with it. And that should be, and that's what I think the movement should be. It should be everybody's responsibility to tell people how they feel about things. You know, and when you go and you put out your hand to shake, if the guy is a germaphobe, which there are germaphobes, and they don't like to touch people's hands, you know, you say, oh, I don't shake hands. You know, I mean, well, we are people. We should be able to talk to other people about what bothers us, so that we're comfortable
totally agree.
And they're comfortable. It shouldn't be one person's responsibility. It should be a mutual responsibility of any type of interaction that you tell people exactly how you feel. You know, don't kiss me. Because,
right.
I don't want to kiss people. You know, whatever it is, or kiss
well,
me
there are,
like that.
There's the individual person, how they feel, and then there's also the cultural indoctrination. And, you know, I teach people from 14 different countries in Central and South America, and they vary widely. I've had some students, some ladies, that they will do, you know, a kiss on each side of the cheek, and it's usually not a real kiss. It's more like cheek to cheek rather
like
than lip to cheek.
Air kissing.
There you go. And, you know, and that is more in South America than Central America, but it varies from person to person. I have some students who absolutely adore a hug, but they might only do it on Thursday at the end of the week and say, have a good weekend. And I love that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some students who they even avoid the handshake. You know, it just, I mean, cultures vary on what's considered affection, what's considered proper, where do you place the hands, upper back, et cetera. But I think our society does not teach people to be able to speak out. I think you hit a root cause right there, is that we're not taught as children that we're valid. We're mm-hmm. little adults at some point, and we should be able to speak out.
Right.
You know, and we should be able to have somebody we can talk to say, something was done to me that I didn't agree with. And it's not always the parents. It should be the parents first, because they birthed you. But if not, a school counselor, a nurse, or, you know, when you're young, a trusted friend is not going to know what to do. They're too young as well. I don't know.
What I think we're talking about, and I have other insights maybe to share on a future program about where this society is right now and the landscape of conduct that
okay.
has created, basically the landscape of what's going on behind the scenes and what's being accepted, and why people don't talk about the conduct that is going on, and why people just basically, you go home and you tell your mom, or you go home and you tell your father, and they say, oh, that's nice, dear, and they never do anything about it, or it appears to go in one ear and out the other. And you're basically mm-hmm. saying, well, gee, I just you know, summed up all the guts that I had in my entire world to tell this responsible party about this, or to tell so-and-so X number of years after the fact, and they just look at me like it's nothing. What I think is that, as you're saying, it's each person's responsibility, and it's not just Dave the hugging machine's responsibility to be asking everyone. It's also the person who is going to receive that hug's responsibility to say, I don't feel right in this situation. But this,
mm-hmm.
what we're talking about present in society right now, at all.
Okay.
So what we're talking, you're basically saying, well, what's the status of this in society right now? The status of this is that this past culture basically says, we won't deal with this because we want to have the ability to do this to people and not have them speak up about it. The status of the world is the way they created it for a reason, so they can be predators in this area. So if you want to change the way the status quo, or if you want to grow a small fraction of society that actually, you know, puts their hand up, or that says, hey, I'm a person, I will not put myself into this college situation, into this high school situation, into this life situation, because I know that the frequency, because I know, hey, if I go to a fraternity on a Friday or Saturday night, and I'm a young lady or whatever, these things are known to happen. I'm just not going to. So people basically turn a blind eye getting into the situation.
And then
everybody wants to turn a blind eye getting out of the situation. So if you can basically say, okay, I'm only going to go to sanctioned events that say, you know, this is a safe event, everybody here understands. Because right now, this society on the issue that we're discussing, on the issue of sexual misconduct, this society as it is created now is for that. It's pro that. It wants that to happen. That's what this society is about. So if you understand that that's what the society is facilitating for the presidential candidate type of person, for the people that are in that inside club, they want to victimize people. That's how they check people out. That's how they get credits. That's how they get. That's how they make their bones and become trusted members of the inside group. So if you look at the society and you basically say, this is what happens in all of these situations, that's the way the society is built, you can basically say, okay, it's my responsibility to understand the society, and it's my responsibility to walk away from those situations in which this is going to happen.
Well, I think... The people are ready to say, we're going to ignore you people, and we're going to do what's right for our communities. We're going to bond our communities. I know people who are starting our community outreach programs that, you know, let's talk about our experiences, let's be in a safe environment, let's empower you to speak your truth, let's empower you to what you can do in a certain situation and what you can't do in a certain situation, and how to speak up for yourself and how to be
right. I want to think that things have changed for the better, Marcy, because I do see more reportings, but it might just be that more reportings are because social media makes us aware of these things, whereas before TV and radio, we don't know what things were like 100 years ago. But I still see that there is this club that Alan's talking about. There are major reports of politicians having sex slaves, for example. And it's like an old school club. It's almost like the Stepford Wives or the Old Boy Network, you know, will never be accused because we're in power. You know, people are afraid to speak out.
Okay.
if it's their boss or a politician.
I want to talk about what we can do that's positive.
Please.
Right.
Pointing fingers and saying them and us don't solve anything, because those people that are doing this are just as hurt and wounded as anybody else, feel just as powerless as anybody else. They may talk a good game, and they have down their shit down pat. I can't necessarily reach them and change them. But they are not that important. They just think they are. If you can reach the community and you start empowering the people and you start changing how we see things and how we do things and how to be do constructive. I see in this movement there was male bashing, and I thought that is wrong just to say males aren't as exposed as females. They are. There's some part in which they become more victimizer than victim, because they can move in society that way. That women don't have, but women just get, kept down, or they tried to, and even that didn't work, because we are everywhere. We are in the bigger positions of power. We are getting there. When I started out in the computer business, I was like the first female female and software person in a hardware group. And if anybody knows about computers, you know, hardware people point at software people, software, you know, there's no, it's your fault. It's the software that's not working. No, it's the hardware that's not working. You know, there was this. So I had to fit in a group that never had females there except as secretaries or clerks to do their bidding.
Take their coffee, answer the phone, sure.
That's right. And so I had to be... I had to take a lot of things in account, because I knew I had to get their trust. And so they would test me. You know, if I say this word, are you going to report me? No, because we're all going to say those words when we're in trouble. If I say this dirty joke, are you going to report me? And no, I'm not going to laugh at it because it's not funny. But I'm not going to say you're sexually harassing me, because I know you're not. I know you're testing me. I know there's a difference between sexual harassment and them trying to figure out if they can trust me or not.
So they're trying to see how you fit in.
Right. You know, because when you're working together and you've been trying to fix this problem for 60 hours and you gotta trust each person that they're bringing their game and they're helping as much as possible, and they're using their knowledge to make both of you a success. And
so you're talking
about
team playing, where all the other players are men, and you're the token female, and they're trying to figure out, is this going to work?
Well, it's a matter of, you know, are you going to be one of the boys? That's basically what they're asking. Or are you
would you fit into their world?
are you going to fit into our world exactly? And I said, yeah, I'm going to fit into your world, but I'm fitting into it on my terms. So you earn your respect that way.
So what were some of the things that you did that make it work? Because, you know, do you turn around and give an equally bad sex joke to them, or do you...
No, I don't.
You know,
because that's not me. I don't have to become them.
Okay.
I just have to earn their respect that I'm a safe place. I'm not going to report them for every little, you know, F-bomb or this or that. And I will do my burden. I carried my own equipment, even when it was almost as tall as me and heavier than I am. You know, there was only one time when I couldn't because of the air quality one day. And I have asthma and I couldn't breathe. And my boss, I said, can you carry this for me? I can't even catch my breath. So, and that was between him and me. And as far as he was concerned, we were equals. So, I didn't have to, prove myself totally, because that would be insane. We would never have got to where we needed to go. Because that, now all the equipment is really small and tiny, and they don't have to worry about that stuff. But back then, they were huge data scopes. And, what?
Well, I know our time is limited, but I want to ask you a question. With the goddess and feminine rising, how do you feel this plays in? Is it helpful? I know for me, as a man, being accepted and being able to see my feminine side was something I was raised with. I was never told that I could only do boy things. My sister was not told that she could only do girl things. So I was very fortunate to have that. But now it seems with this new rising that we're getting more opportunities for, at least for men, to be able to cry, talk, express, and hopefully it is helpful in what's going on in Me Too. But, your thoughts.
My thoughts. Which is anti everybody else's thoughts. I think we are more alike than we are different. And where we are different, that's our strength. And I believe we're all becoming divine beings, not divine feminine, not divine masculine. We need to stop separating ourselves. We need to accept everyone for who and what they are. I don't believe, me personally, and I know a lot of people like this, they like the separation. I don't, because I think perpetuates are not communicating with each other. It perpetuates that we are so different when we are not.
Right.
The differences are very minor. But they're important. They are our inner strengths. And this should be the time of the divine, the divinity, the divine being, not the divine feminine, not the divine masculine. They're separating them, but they shouldn't be. And when we come together, we should come together in mixed groups, because that's where when we really decide to start speaking our truths, because that's where we find out that we are so much more alike than we are different. Because, we all hurt the same way. We all love the same way. We all do all this the same way. What we do differently are our strengths. And once we have the conversation and we realize we're not that different, that's when they really can't control you. The mysterious they that wants to separate everyone, wants to pin everyone against each other.
The duality.
There is no such thing as duality. It's an illusion that we created to say it's them against us, and we are the righteous, right? You know, self-righteousness
right.
is not.
And there is no them.
Is baloney, because there is no right way or wrong way. There's just
right.
deciding what is the best way for us to interact together and communicate. You know, that was the big thing my guy has given me, is that until you learn to communicate, you will not be able to function right. It's what is missing. When you feel insulted by somebody or hurt by something somebody said, you're doing it based on your perception of what they said, not necessarily on what they meant, they intended, but your perception of it. So you got to start looking, say, hey, maybe I saw this wrong, maybe I missed something, or maybe I just they said what they said and walked away, and you took it in a, you personally take that in whatever way you want, and their intention, they might not even know what they said. They might not even know they said anything that was.
Or know that it hurt.
Right. It's funny.
You have a very good perception, Marcy. I think it comes down to personal responsibility, willingness to communicate, and we can stop things in its tracks as long as we're physically able to, before things get out of hand. But also getting that feedback loop. Did I hear you say that? Did you mean that? Asking the appropriate question, you know, I want to understand why you said that. What does it mean? And maybe they'll say, oh, no, I didn't intend it that way. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, instead of walking off and then feeling that both parties were wrong, or wronged.
I tell you what, you know, at the drum circle at Neolith, I made a statement which I didn't mean the way it sounded, because then the person I said it to said it back to me, and I said, whoa, that sounds terrible. I didn't mean it that way.
Okay.
You know, and it, you know, we don't even know how it sounds until somebody says it back to us. And our intention might not have been anything like that. And I said, wow, that was a mean thing to say, but I didn't mean it that way. I just meant, and I explained it. And I said, wow, well, thank you for sharing that for me. Because sometimes what comes out of your mouth, you don't think about all the different ways people can interpret it.
What are your suggestions? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Well, what are your suggestions for the upcoming generation to be able to prevent the Me Too that's going on? Do we need parents to be trained to be better parents? Do we ask the education system to step in? Do we ask for counselors at school? to take each kid aside once a month and ask them how they're doing? How do we build that trust and that ability to speak and that ability to stick up for yourself and all of that?
Well, I don't have any kids. Well, I don't know for sure, but my impression of some of the shows and some of the things I see, which may or may not be true, is that we're making them into sexual beings before they're ready.
Oh, that's certainly TV.
And you know, with the TV shows, and you know, I watch some of those and I go, ooh, I don't know that we we're not teaching them to communicate at all with people. We're not teaching them to interact with people. I mean, they do everything on their phones. They text everything on their phones, and they bully each other on their phones. And but that's an impression not based on knowledge, but just on TV shows I'm watching, which I don't know how accurate they are. You know, they make it seem like all of them are sexually active, and I'm like, ooh. Well,
life imitates art. If we see it on TV, we see it as acceptable. Now, that could be a benefit. I mean, we are able to see people who are gay on TV, and that's totally acceptable, whereas 20 years ago, it was still relatively taboo.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, seeing young kids as sexual beings when they're not capable or ready, that's not a good thing.
Television, getting back to what the society is and who is controlling the attitudes of society, television and all entertainment is part of that older system. And what I would say going forward to make a change is we're not going to make a change overnight. And we're not going to basically say, okay, the following has to be taught in school, because it's not the school's deal to do that. So I would say maybe at your upcoming festivals, but more frequently, like, how are we going to have that be a part of Touch Mother Earth? Have that be a part that's emphasized so that people remember it, so that people say, hey, this is something that, you know, this was something that was a part of the Touch Mother Earth Festival. I actually had to change my behavior and encounter people in such a way that I had to ask them for permission to do things that I normally do just without thinking, sort of more of a conscious, hey, I'm going to approach this person. And so basically you'd have somebody maybe up on a stage at Touch Mother Earth. You have one person at one side of the stage. You have one person all the way at the other end of the stage. And you actually have them act out, hey, hi, I want to shake your hand, or hey, I'm feeling really bubbly from the festival. I want to hug you. And then the other person on the other side of the stage says, oh, no, I'm not. But each person has to take an equal role. And it's acting out those things on the stage, much like Hollywood acts out what
psychodrama.
So Hollywood, from Punch and Judy, from Shakespeare, from all the way back from Beethoven, from opera, has always put up how it wants society's attitudes to be. If you want to change society's attitudes, you have to make an equivalent drama. You have to have the bouncing balls on the letter to basically teach the immigrants the language when they're in the cinema doing a sing-along. You have to actually orchestrate the behavior and say, it is possible. It's your brainchild. Let's say, quote unquote, it's our brainchild. And you want to say, okay, how am I going to broadcast this? Well, what I would do is I would get some friends of yours and rehearse. Okay, here's how we're going to present this. And then when you actually have a good, tight presentation of the change in attitude, the cool thing today is you can film it and put it on YouTube. And then it's everywhere. And then you can promote it. So there's no lack of capability to broadcast. There's no lack of capability to tag it with Me Too social attitude change. Things like that. That's so to get it out there. It just basically says we're all sitting around. Three of us are sitting around a round table here where I'm living right now, and we say, okay, how are we going to do this? And we have to say, okay, it's up to the three of us, and we say, okay, how can we write a scenario? Let's write the simple scenario of Dave the hugger has to find out whether the person he's approaching wants to be hugged. But we have to say, okay, here's the scenario in which Dave is the only active participant in trying to find out if the other person wants to be hugged. And the other person is doing little awkward body language and stuff. You say, hey, that doesn't work. And then you say, here's how we'd like it to work. So you show a couple of examples of how it doesn't work, but maybe the only thing you show is in the final product is you show the 10 seconds or the 15 seconds where both sides are communicating, or you say at the bottom, you say, we'd like to emphasize in the following scenario that both sides are taking active responsibility for the outcome, because the person who doesn't want to be hugged is saying they're holding up a big sign saying no thank you, and Dave's coming in with both arms open but saying excuse me, I'm really feeling like hugging people, but I want to know if you're accepting that, and then to get it down to people can look at that and say, oh my gosh, I've been threatening people by being overbearing in a similar way in another facet of my behavior. So maybe they take that in. So there's a lot of ways to get it out there. There's a lot of ways to say, hey, I'm not going to wait till Touch Mother Earth next summer. You can basically say, hey, we're going to do a play, a little psychodrama play at your next, I don't know what your next drum circle is. But what you do is you have it as a 10-minute beginning of your drum circle. And you say, hey, this is going to feel a little awkward because we don't have everything down. But I know you guys are going to give me space because we want to rehearse this. We want to change social norms. We want to empower both sides of the interaction to actually be participating, to actually feel, okay, both sides do have a voice. But the victim basically says, oh, I never had a voice. And you have to tell the victim, no, you had a voice. You needed to speak up from the beginning. You can't just basically sit there with a closed mouth and expect to be a participant.
Alan, I really, that's deep, and I totally appreciate it. And you're right, working it in smaller groups that lead up to a festival so that we're all part of that
network
of understanding.
Or working it in smaller groups. Or working it in smaller groups and videotaping it and getting it out there so that people who are coming to the festival aren't offended. They basically know that this is, hey, this is Touch Mother Earth. You've known Touch Mother Earth for the last few years. We're going to dig a little bit deeper this year, and we're going to actually try to make people aware of their behavior, because we can't continue to basically say, walk around like the three monkeys, and we want to actually start prying those hands away from the eyes and the mouth and the ears. Yep.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much. Thank you, as always, for hosting this program. And it's great that we have a forum and ability to communicate. Marcy, you have had great insight. I've learned a lot from what you've said today. So thank you for being the caller today. You got the star.
Well,
I think we're concluded, Alan.
Thank you, Marcy, and thank you, Dave, for being on the show. It is semi non-productive to look at society and say, where are we now? But we are society. It is the puzzle that we grew up in. And to look at the society that we're in now and say, that is my identity now, it's not pointing the finger and saying it's a them, because you can't point the finger, because we're all alone here with our own psychological puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And then you
okay.
basically say, okay, what are the positive steps that I can take to basically encourage change? And it is okay, what do we want to change? We want to change a great fabric of society. Well, how do you start to change the great fabric of society and its attitudes toward illusions that we divide ourselves from ourselves with? The male-female illusion, the racial illusion, country illusion, the religious division illusion that we use on ourselves to divide ourselves from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of understanding just enough where we are and what we want to change, so that you can talk to people and give them a background so they can know what you're trying to change.
Excellent, Alan. You wrapped that up very well. And do you feel we should have another session?
I feel that if we can get commitments from other guests, that we should have other sessions, because other people have other attitudes. And other people can talk about other things. If we want to have a more rear view mirror session of looking at the society and being honest about our present, I don't view the society as being a bad place. I don't view a society as being evil, like Marcy was saying, nothing's evil, it's just where you are. It's a way, it's a social fabric. If we want to understand that a little bit more in detail, I can talk about that in a future episode, but I would like to talk to more guests. in, you know, if I had my choice.
Well, then we will plan another session and we'll make sure we have more guests lined up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. Have a great night, and thanks for being on the show. Here I am trying to play with a mouse at the same time I'm talking. All right. Good night. Thanks for being on the show. And hey, everyone. My name is Alan Ritter. I run a small produce club, produce sales in the southeastern Pennsylvania, southern New Jersey area. It's called the Produce Club. And you can get in touch with me, or you can get in touch with me about this show at RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. And people can get in touch with Dave at touchmotherearth.com. Right, Dave?
touchmotherearthevents@gmail.com.
Okay. touchmotherearthevents@gmail.com. And Marcy, do you want to leave any contact points or any Facebook pages or anything for people to get in touch with you?
My business email is ms.reiki@me.com, and they can find me on Facebook. I'm there. They can find me. I have a group there called Flower of Life Circle, and I have a page called Light Energy Therapy LLC.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for being on the show, and have a great week, and I'll see how quickly I can get this episode up on YouTube. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, Alan. Night. Bye-bye.
For listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.